I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guest is Jake Cradaville from Sons of Bannock. We're talking about music and finding inspiration here in East Idaho, and he's brought his guitar.
Music is always good for the soul, isn't it, Lee?
Well, so this is a first for us. We've got a musician in-house. We're going to hear some music.
Right.
Really looking forward to it.
And, you know, Jake and Sons of Bannock have our closing and opening music for us here.
That's right. So they did us a solid. We're doing them a solid. Let's have some music and talk about nature and music together. I think this is going to be fun.
Yeah, and how Idaho inspires us all.
Hey, you know what? I think you ought to give us some nature news.
We need some nature news, Lee. Plants, there are certain stressors that cause plants to flower, and there is a creature out there who's figured that out. You would kind of think it would be something that's like a smart primate of some sort, but
sure,
it's a bumblebee.
A bumblebee?
A bumblebee has figured out that if they kind of stress a plant out, it can actually trigger that plant to flower early.
Wait, so how do you stress out a plant?
So what the bumblebees do is they take their little mandibles, their little pincers on their mouth,
okay,
and they pinch the leaf.
Wait, say that again.
The bumblebee pinch the leaf.
They pinch the leaf, and the plant goes, ah!
Hey, this is not right. Maybe I should flower.
Okay, so the bumblebee comes in, takes its mandibles, pinches the leaf, and then immediately the flower starts flowering.
Not immediately, but it flowers earlier. So, what these researchers have done is that they looked at tomato plants and mustard plants, and with tomato plants, if a bumblebee pinches that leaf, it actually flowers up to 30 days earlier.
So that means your bumblebee is looking ahead.
Is looking ahead,
right?
Yes.
So it's got to pinch the leaves and then know which plants it's pinched and then come back a little later.
And there it is. And with the mustard greens, it's 14 days earlier. They did this in a research setting, but they've also noticed this happening out in nature in the wild itself. And the thing about this is the bumblebee is the only pollinator that they know that does this. Honeybees won't do this. But the nice thing is the honeybees and other pollinators benefit from the bumblebee's activities.
Who's responding to who? Is the plant responding to the bumblebee, or is the bumblebee making the...
I think it's a little bit of both. So when you look at nowadays with climate change and how it's kind of affecting when plants bloom, sometimes they bloom early, sometimes they bloom a little bit later, and the bumblebees have figured out when there's not a flower that they do pinch. So they're reacting to the lack of flower, and then when they pinch the leaves, the flower then reacts to that, the plant reacts to that, and flowers, blooms.
So if I have plants that are not flowering, can I pinch them?
You can try. I don't know if they'll work.
I have to think right. Like a bee.
Think like a bee,
okay.
and like a bumblebee, not a honeybee, like a bumblebee.
You know, animals are so darn clever. We just keep learning something new every day. So thanks for bringing that in. You know, we're doing music and nature today, and our trivia question is all about Idaho and our history of music. This is a good one. What is the top-selling musical band in Idaho's history? Some of you folks out there will know this and probably were listening to this group back in the day. When we come back from the break, you're going to hear the answer to that question, but even better, we're going to have some music.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Treat me this way.
thank you so much. I want to welcome Jake Cradville. He's vocalist and guitar player from Sons of Bannock. So thank you for joining us today on Nature of Idaho.
Thank you guys for having me.
Jake, we've got to talk a little bit about how you got to Idaho, because all three of us sitting in this room are transplants. We're not from Idaho. Yeah. You're a little bit closer from where I came from.
Well, I grew up in Grand Forks, North Dakota. When I was young, my dad would take us on ski trips out to Montana. And when we saw the landscape out there, I knew right then I wanted to live in the mountains and around rivers and stuff. So I kind of went back and made a plan to come out west. And once I came out here, I decided to stay. And I've been out here since 2006. And I've done the most amazing hiking, camping, fishing, recreating that you can do. And we live in such a beautiful area that it's hard to imagine living anywhere else at this point.
Yeah, we're not going to say Grand Forks or the upper Midwest is ugly. It's just there's a whole lot of horizon there, and you can see it forever. You know, growing up in Northwest Iowa, it was flat.
We used to say you could watch your dog run away for 3 days.
Yeah, yeah. You could see your neighbor 10 miles away come out of the driveway.
But yeah. In the same sense, you know, I do go back and I see a whole different beauty in the prairie that I didn't appreciate when I lived there. And now I see it in a whole different perspective. So there is beauty and diversity there. It's just, you know, you have to have an open mind to be looking for it.
Coming from the east myself, I think it was a bit startling to find so few trees around here. And when you live out in the far, I grew up in eastern Canada, when you're driving on the roads, all you see everywhere is trees, trees, trees. And when you move out west, it's absolutely striking that you see a skyline, that you see mountains, that you can tell what direction you're going based on what mountain range is where.
Right.
And it's a totally different view. When you moved out here, what really struck you first?
The diversity of it all, you know, the sagebrush and different plants that grew in the desert here, as opposed to where I'm at, it was, you know, more wet. It gets more rain, and so there's a lot more dry plants over here and stuff. And the public lands is basically the biggest deal for me, like living over here. We didn't have a whole lot of public lands in North Dakota because everything is pretty much farming. And so now living around all these public lands and basically feeling a pride and ownership of, hey, this is our land. This is stuff that me and my friends can use, my family can use. And it was just a big difference of knowing that there are tons of camping spots, tons of places to recreate. And most of it was free to us to use, you know. And back home, they had a few state parks and different areas that were you'd pay to go in there and use the areas. But here we have just the amazing recreation, camping, hiking.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things that I hope everyone in Idaho really appreciates. As a kid, we would have to ask permission to go across someone's property, someone's land, to access a river.
Right.
The river was public access, but how do you get to it when it's not surrounded by
exactly.
public access land?
Exactly.
Does the landscape feed into your inspiration? Where do you find your inspiration for the music you write?
Yeah, the landscape has a lot to do with it. You know, if you hike up to a pretty area and you're inspired, or you're kind of thinking about a tune while you're schlogging up the hill, and then you get to the top and you're taking in the whole beauty of looking down the valley below and just kind of feeling the air blow through you and watching a hawk go by or something. And, you know, even if you don't write it down at that particular moment, you take it with you and it's in your heart now. And now you go to write a song and you're thinking about these mountain peaks that you just saw, or this green pine tree, or, you know, how this hawk looked at you and screamed kind of at the perfect moment while the Union Pacific train was rolling through the valley down below, and you're kind of sitting up top feeling far away from it, and it almost feels like you're in a different world at the time, because you can just kind of get away from things, and it inspires you to get inside your own mind and live in a little fantasy world where you can make up the reality that you want it to be. And with a song, you can paint whatever picture you want with that and have a blank canvas. It's pretty neat sometimes what comes out, because even I amaze myself sometimes, or friends write songs that just totally amaze me. And I'm like, how'd you even think of that? You know, that's pretty neat.
All right, let's get down to Sons of Bannock. Everyone's going to talk about 1,000 different genres of music. Describe Sons of Bannock's music and kind of what inspires you and the Sons of Bannock. If there are other musicians out there that have really inspired you and pushed you forward to make Sons of Bannock such a great band.
Well, we met at open mics and stuff because all of us were looking to take it further with music. So what do? You get your guitar and you go down to the open mic, which is a great place. I suggest businesses to have open mics and all that stuff. So we met down there. We start practicing, writing songs because we said, hey, you know, if we want to be in a band, we'd rather be an original band writing our own songs than just being a cover band where, you know, we could go out and play everyone else's music, but we'd rather do something that was from our heart. And so we all just decided to start writing songs, and we took inspiration from old-timey music that was more simplified and more easily structured, that we could kind of have our own chord progressions and tell our story of living in Idaho, kind of the heartbreaks that we've been through, the different chapters in some of our lives that we've kind of had to live before you can write about it. And that's kind of the hard thing about the songs, is sometimes you have to go through these emotions before you can actually convey them in a song. And so a lot of us were young and going through college and doing other stuff. And so just music was always the escape and always kind of like the little side thing that made us happy. You know, if we had Wednesday night, we could get together, and no matter what was going on in the country, we had that little release. And then hey, they want you to play Friday night down here. Oh, okay, yeah, we'll show up. And before you know it, we're making people happy, and they say, hey, we want you to play here. And so we just move around to wherever they want us. And the great part is we've built the fan base around our friends and different people in the community that have supported us and been there. You know, they've helped us haul the guitars into the show and held the door for us, or bought us a beer, came up after the show and said, hey, you know, you guys, that meant a lot to me. And it's kind of kept us going over the years and kept us involved in being a band in Pocatello, because it's not always the easiest. Everyone knows we don't have a lot of nightclubs around here that are playing music, and there's different venues, but it's few and far between, as opposed to like a bigger city like Salt Lake or Chicago or any of those other places where people are playing music. So it's pretty cool that there are so many bands around here and so many creative people. I've met more creative people in Pocatello, Idaho. It seemed like everyone was in a band, or everyone was making music or making art or contributing somehow to this communal effort that we got going on here, which makes this such a great place to live, you know?
For sure. It's great that you can find, you know, people that are interested in creating, and it's really about creating and maybe holding a mirror to the world and processing, I guess, the emotions that you feel, whether it's from nature or things that are happening, you know, in the world around us today. Maybe as a lead-in to the next song, do you want to tell us a little bit about it before you play?
Sure. Music kind of goes hand in hand with climate of the country and stuff, and it's always been an outlet of how people deal with things, and we have to fight racism with whatever tools we can, and for me that tool is music, and that's all I have to kind of give back to what's going on in the country. And you know, I'll never understand the black experience or what's going on, but I can only hope to be a positive light and just try to change a little bit of what's going on. And so in the tradition of songwriters, I wrote this song in kind of solidarity and understanding with the Black Lives Matter movement, and I'd like to share it with you. And I've never sang this, I just wrote this. If I screw it up, it's okay.
Listening. wouldn't happen if he just wouldn't resist. Yeah, okay, believe those lies. Turn the cheek when an innocent man dies. We're gonna burn the system down when no one's listening. Get loud. We're gonna burn the system down when no one's listening. You get loud.
Thank you, Jake. It's the first time it's been performed. It's great. When you look at the history of music for the United States, you can go back to Woody Guthrie and his protest songs during the Great Depression. You know, I grew up listening to punk rock. Mm-hmm. It just made folk songs a little bit louder and a little bit faster.
Absolutely.
And it's a voice, and it's a voice that we all can hear and appreciate.
Yeah, I think it creates awareness, and, you know, we need more people like me talking about things that are happening to people that don't look like me. And a lot of my friends don't look like me, so I would like to have a voice for those people.
I grew up and still grow up with, like, music of the 70s is sort of, like, center for me. So, like, Dylan, you were mentioning Ox earlier. Like, yep. These are people that I click into, and it seems like there's common themes that inspire music of the late 60s, 70s, and it seems to circle around where the politics of the day are, where nature is, and where love is. And there's sort of like a where those three things kind of meet. That's where a lot of inspiration is driven. Tell us about the process you have, I guess, in identifying, you know, the feelings that you have, and then how do you, like, get that into a song? Do you write words first, music first?
Well, this one was really easy because it's really, you know, it's not hard to turn on the TV and be affected by what's going on, you know, and if it's in your heart and you truly feel that there's injustices going on, it's really easy to just get a chord progression going and start writing your feelings down. And before you know it, you know, you have a theme and I kind of went with it. And other times it's, you know, I would like to write more love songs at times too, you know, because it's not always about your feelings about negative energy. You got to like find a way to channel your positive energies too and find a way to, you know, make those happy songs and stuff too. But we're in such a climate right now where we need more songs that are going to address the issues at hand that is going on in the country. And like I said, it's just really easy to be inspired right now because right or wrong, like it or not, stuff is happening. And you can put your head in the sand and try to ignore it, but sooner or later we have to deal with it and we have to acknowledge that things need to change. Things got to happen. We have to move forward as a country. We all need to bond together, left or right, black or white, we all need to come together with the love, like you were talking about, how they all circle around each other. But sometimes we have to have radical things happen to spark change.
Well, I was going to say one of the you know, from the 70s, you know, John Denver, mm-hmm. sort of for Colorado as a state, really brought those three kinds of, through environmentalism, respect for nature, and absolute like pure love for those things that were so positive in his world, was a really good conduit for bringing up those sorts of topics. Many other people have done this too, but I'm thinking at the state level, I think, you know, few people have done what he was able to do for the view of the Intermountain West and Colorado in particular. And it seems like Idaho is also a place that can conjure up those same, that sort of well of feelings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I agree with the John Denver statement. He was an activist and a heck of a skier too. So
I bet he was.
and I think the important part too with music is it's an avenue of opening up a dialogue. And it's a dialogue that's far reaching. And you can look at John Denver and environmental concerns. One of my favorite bands, you know, I always called them, they're like a druidic folk punk band from England. And most of their songs are environmentally based. And, you know, they started in the 80s. So, you know, nuclear energy and nuclear war was a big thing and all this other good stuff. But it opened up a dialogue. And with this song, you're opening up a dialogue, a dialogue that we might not necessarily have here in Pocatello because we're not at any of these epicenters. We, like you said, we're watching it on TV, but it's something for us to think about.
I want to lead into your last song with us today. Why don't you tell us about it?
Okay, this one will actually play in nicely to the theme of it. This one's called My Hometown, and it's about actually being in Idaho and wishing I was in North Dakota because one of my friends had passed away, and this is another way to deal with feelings, is you take those energies and feelings that you have and you put it to song and put it to music. And so this is basically me lighting a fire and sitting back in the fire pit by myself and strumming my guitar and wrote this song in tribute to one of my friends who is no longer with us. And it's about me wishing I could be with my friends that were at this funeral, but I'm in Idaho and not able to get there, so.
Good friend was dead and gone, so I sat down right there. I felt back in my bed, thinking of things that I wished I said.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, guys.
It is, you know, that's the nice thing about Idaho and Pocatello. Even though it's talking about hometown in North Dakota, you step outside, you look around, take a breath, and it feels good to be back.
It is.
So, Jake, we started the show off with a trivia question about the top-selling musical band in Idaho's history. Can you help us out with the answer to that question?
Yes, I can. It was Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Woohoo! Yeah. Paul Revere and the Raiders with over 50 million records sold. Go
right.
Idaho.
Wow. No kidding. And honestly, I would have never guessed Paul Revere and the Raiders.
I would have said Built to Spill, like we were saying.
Right. Yeah. This is how young we are. It's not Paul Revere. Funny. It's Built to Spill. All right. We want to thank Jake Cradaville for being here today. And you know what? If you want to listen to more Sons of Bannock, check them out at Bandcamp. It's Sons of Bannock at Bandcamp.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org. Or send email to noidkisu@isu.edu.